This is an iHeart podcast.
Why do I talk so much about national divorce? And we're doing a whole special on it, national divorce. Why do I talk so much about it? I think I should give you the why before I give you all this other stuff, Biden and the divide and where we're at and all of our great guests and all that. I do think I should give you the why. I'm just going to be real honest with you here. I've seen some really, really ugly violence in my life. That's just how life works. I don't need you to feel bad for me. That's how life works. So be it. It's awful. It's not like in the movies. It's really, 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 it's awful. It's not things. I remember seeing things and actually thinking to myself as I'm seeing them, wow, that sucks. I really hope a lot of people don't have to see things like this in their lives. At the time, I remember thinking that. And that was on foreign soil, for the most part. Seen some death here, too, but let's set that aside. And when I think about our nation right now and where we are and us going like this, separating so quickly, when I talk about national divorce, it's not as if I feel like it's going to happen the way I want it to happen. You know, everybody, both sides come together. Let's sit down at the table. Let's divide up the assets. It's not as if I'm not naive. I understand it's not likely. I understand all the roadblocks between here and national divorce. There is only one reason I push for it so hard and why I want it so bad. I think that violence is coming here. I think it is inevitable. Because remember, a nation, no matter the size, call it a tiny tribe in the outback somewhere, or a huge, powerful country like America. It only comes into existence for one reason. A group of people decide they share common values, and so they can live with each other. And because they share common values, we believe the same things. If we come together and live together, we will have more safety and more prosperity. You know, the sum of two parts is greater than two or something like that. I don't know. I'm not an algebra expert. You understand what I mean, though. If we work together, it's more prosperous. We're more safe. That's the only reason to become a nation or a tiny tribe, whatever the level is. But, and this has happened a million times in history before, if we don't share any common values, then what we've created is not some nation of safety and prosperity. What we've created is a powder keg that's going to blow. It's a cage with two animals who hate each other living inside of it. They're going to fight. They're going to hurt each other, possibly really badly. We must separate them. We must separate. That does not make me happy to say. And I don't think any of our guests tonight are going to be thrilled about it. I'm not sitting here, woohoo, break up the country, baby. That'll be awesome. That sucks. I love this place. I'd die for this place. I don't want to see anybody get hurt. I don't. Not on the left, not on the right, nobody. I don't want to see a single American get hurt. And I am really genuinely worried we are racing towards a place in this society, whether it be on a large scale or a smaller scale, where people are going to get hurt. And I don't want it. And the truth is, it's gotten to the point I almost feel like the left does want it. I mean, when you have major politicians, we're not talking about just some nutball on the internet. The most powerful people on the left, when they talk like this, I have to tell you, I think they want violence.
And we won't ignore what our intelligence agencies have determined to be the most lethal terrorist threat to the homeland today. White supremacy is terrorism.
White supremacy? White supremacy? I'll tell you what, we'll come back to that. You do remember all the Black Lives Matter people and the Antifa people torching American cities last year, right? Oftentimes not even charged with crimes, just let them right out of jail, local communist DA. Oh, go on, you're fine. It was civil rights. Remember that CNN picture? Fiery, but mostly peaceful. You do remember that, right? You've never seen white supremacists do that in half a century? When was the last time you saw a large organized gathering of white supremacists, period? Which is funny. When is the last time you met a white supremacist at all? I'm not saying there aren't any out there. Obviously, there's always a supremacist of some skin color out there. There's no question. Racism tends to be the nature of man. When's the last time you met one? Do you know why you don't remember meeting one? Because even if you did meet one, he is perfectly aware there's virtually nothing worse you could be in this society today. He would be shunned, shamed, lose his job, and possibly end up in jail for being a white supremacist. White supremacy does not exist in any significant organized form in the United States of America, which is funny because there was a poll taken right after the election. You want to talk about two different Americas? Remember what I just said. White supremacy does not exist in any organized form in this country at all. The only time you've ever seen a meeting is five fat KKK guys on the courthouse steps somewhere with 25 cops surrounding them because they have to be protected from the 500 people there who want to beat them all up. They're not significant. And yet there was a YouGov poll taken right after the election. What is the biggest threat to America's way of life? Look at that poll. 54% of Democrats in this country, that's a Democrat poll you're looking at, believe white supremacy is a danger to the way of life. That is, as you can see, more than double people who are worried about economics, natural disasters, any foreign threats. Okay, so we have more than half of the other side. They exist entirely in a world of make-believe? Do you believe that's overcomable? I mean, when you have this media campaign like that, this endless, relentless media campaign pushing this into people's eyes and ears, look, this is what people are consuming every night. Do you believe this is easily overcomable?
Well, if you think you're not racist, you could be right, but in this day and age, that's simply not good enough.
What I did wrong in 2016 is I overestimated white people.
The biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized to the right.
Those white guys, those middle-aged, boring, nerdy-looking white guys.
And white people have been probably woefully late to this conversation.
But I'm not willing to let white voters off the hook.
Do you believe that white folks actually care about racial injustice?
It doesn't appear that we do. I mean, the status quo of our society is racism, and it's comfortable for white people.
People watch those news programs, and they believe that's reality. And look, this goes way, way, way beyond white supremacy and black people and all this. It goes way beyond that. The divide in this country. Let's remember, the current Attorney General, Merrick Garland, Attorney General of the United States of America, has recently directed the Federal Bureau of Investigation to go after parents who are concerned about their child's education. They're now using the federal law enforcement arm to intimidate concerned parents into silence. Do you really think we're putting this band back together again? This is not overcomable. We just put handcuffs on a 16-year-old girl in Idaho. What was her crime? She didn't put her mask on. She refused to put her mask on. We place handcuffs on this child. We're not overcoming divides like this. I mean, when you have the President of the United States of America standing in front of his bully pulpit and he, you know, swings a big stick and he points to a significant portion of American society and tells everybody, that's the enemy. You're not patching this back together.
The fact is, this has been a pandemic of the unvaccinated. Unvaccinated. The unvaccinated overcrowd our hospitals, overrunning emergency rooms and intensive care units. The unvaccinated patients are are leaving no room for someone with a heart attack or in need of a cancer operation, and so much more because they can't get into the ICU, they can't get into the operating rooms. The unvaccinated also put our economy at risk because people are reluctant to go out. Think about this. Even in places where there is no restriction on going to restaurants and gyms and movie theaters, people are not going in anywhere near the numbers because they're worried they're going to get sick.
That's how monsters and tyrants talk. Pick your historical monster. I don't care how bad they are. They spoke exactly like that. Here are the problems in our society. Here are all the people who are to blame for it. Let's go get them. I don't take pleasure in what we're going to talk about tonight, national divorce. And we got Jack Posobiec coming up next to talk about it. I don't take pleasure in it at all. I really don't. But I think it's necessary. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I'm right. We got a great show for you tonight. We have great guests. Let's see if we can do some good. Coming up next. He always has a sharp take, and he always has good information for us. Joining me now, my friend Jack Posobiec. Probably doesn't need any intro since his podcast is destroying everybody right now. It is Human Events Daily. I highly recommend checking it out as on Apple Podcasts. Jack, obviously, you know, we're going to talk about national divorce for a second. Why are you so good at podcasting?
It's probably because not only am I just eye candy, but I also have very intelligent things to say.
Not you know, that's why we get along. That's why we get along. All right, in all seriousness, I'm a national divorce guy. I want one. I'm not naive. I don't think it's actually going to happen in the way I want it to happen, where we all sit down as adults and agree that we hate each other's guts, and we're just going to divide up the assets and liabilities and call it a day. You're not a national divorce guy? Why?
So I'm not a national divorce guy, partially because, you know, I do think that something, if you look back at U.S. history, it's kind of asked and answered, that it's not happening. And when it has been tried in the past, obviously, it has not gone very well. If you're a member of any of the southern states, you know why. However, I could see something along the lines of a national separation happening, you know, where it's basically like, we're sleeping in two bedrooms, we're dating other people, we kind of get it, but we're still under the same roof. I think that's more likely than a full-on divorce, quite frankly, because you don't have adults in charge anywhere in this country. So nobody is going to, if you look at the way we've handled COVID, if you look at the way that we handled the George Floyd, the protests, the riots, Antifa, etc., we don't respond to anything like adults. Afghanistan, we respond like children. We're immature. We can't handle those type of conversations because we do everything super emotionally. Like my three-year-old, when he screams and, you know, has a tantrum because I say he can't watch Paw Patrol anymore, and it's time to go eat some veggies or something, right? That's basically how this country reacts to pretty much every single problem. So I don't think you're going to see something where people could sit down amicably and say, look, we need a division of assets. You know, you guys can get San Francisco. You built it. You destroyed it. It's yours. Not going to happen.
Okay. I don't necessarily disagree. I see us already separating. You can tell because New York and California are losing congressional seats as people flee for red areas. And I can see that. My problem is, Jack, the federal government, they don't look like they have any intention of leaving red areas, red people alone at this point in time. In fact, they're getting awfully aggressive. I have Merrick Garland right here sicking the FBI on parents who are worried about their kids' education. It doesn't sound like they're interested in living and letting live.
Oh, no, they're not. They're absolutely not. And you're going to see, by the way, when you talk about, we know what the FBI does when he's sicking them on these different groups. They're not going to come in and say, oh, you're under investigation. They're going to go into those groups and say, hey, you guys are anti-woke. I'm anti-woke too. Let's talk. Let's make lists of people. Let's do, you know, do all this stuff and then try to get them trapped up in or gripped up in these entrapment operations like we saw what happened in Michigan with the Gretchen Whitmer plot, which has now been completely exposed as an FBI-driven operation. You're probably going to see that. I called out, and I've got a lot of flack this week for saying it, but I called out one of these groups that put themselves together as the feds who were against the mandate. So an anti-vax group that came together and said, we are going to be a group of federal employees, so we're all feds, who say that we're against the mandate. Okay, sure, I get it. I'm down with you guys. I love the fight. But you've got to do it in a smart way, because you're opening yourself up for this type of encroachment, this type of infiltration, and these sorts of operations. Because we get one person in who says, hey, let's all download this app. Hey, let's go to Discord, et cetera, et cetera. So no, you're not going to see right now any sort of back off by the federal government. But what you could see potentially is, as you mentioned, we are already seeing the separation, the national separation, take place. Texas and Florida, of course, are the archetypes of this. I think you'll probably also see similar taking place with Wyoming, Idaho, South Dakota, North Dakota. You'll see those, that type of people moving there. And then once those red areas become more bright red areas, you're going to get, they're going to elect politicians at the state level who are going to thumb their nose in the face of the federal government. You're seeing that now with Abbott. You know, he's got a hard right challenger in his primary. So what did he do? Now he's against mandates. DeSantis, he's against mandates, right? That's a state that when he, remember, DeSantis only won by what, 0.5% against, well, we don't need to talk about who he ran against. And his parties and his party. But the situation is, you're going to get governors out there, and these people are going to demand, right? Because they these are refugees, right? These are refugees from this stuff. They're going to demand someone to come up there to protect them from the federal government first and foremost. You're going to see that be a huge plank when it comes to state politics, and certainly for governorships.
Jack, do you think the states have enough juice to provide some level of protection? Everyone knows the federal government has their fingers in every daggone thing, including the states, corporations, education. And that's part of the reason we're in such trouble right now, is they are, have so much control. But states like Texas and states like Florida, for people fleeing there, are they able to provide some level of protection against this?
Well, some of the larger states can, and this is where Texas and Florida have more of a comparative advantage, because they have large tax bases of their own. Of course, Florida has a massive economy when it comes to tourism, and Texas has a massive economy because of oil and various other, and trade just in general, because it's where it's situated. So you're going to see them have a better ability to actually fight back, as opposed to, and I hate to say this, but you know, some of the smaller states, some of the less populated states are not going to have this ability. I was just up in Alaska. They're fighting a lot of these same issues, because one of the main things in Alaska was, they said, all right, in the 1950s, we want to become a state. And the federal government said, sure, you can become a state as long as we develop your natural resources so that you can become self-sufficient. But then the federal government came in and said, guess what? Just kidding. You can't develop any of your own natural resources. We're going to declare them all protected. So all that copper, all that lithium, all that oil that's sitting right below your feet, the gold, of course, that's sitting right below your feet, you're not actually going to be able to use that. We're going to keep you people in poverty. And then we're going to do everything we can to fight back against it.
Ugh, gosh, you know what? That actually reminds me perfectly. I have a little video of Joe Biden I want you to watch. Here it is.
When you see headlines and reports of mass firings and hundreds of people losing their jobs, look at the bigger story. I've spoken with Scott Kirby, CEO of United Airlines, who's here today. United went from 59% of their employees to 99% of their employees in less than 2 months after implementing the requirement. 99%.
What a miracle, Jack. What if you fire everybody who's unvaccinated, all of a sudden your percentages go up? But in all seriousness, not trying to make light of this, I have said before, I think this is really dangerous. I think it's really dangerous, this pandemic of the unvaccinated talk.
Oh, this type of talk is, so he's doing what any regime has done throughout history. When you're faced with sagging poll numbers, when you're faced with threats to your legitimacy, what do? You pick an issue, you polarize the entire country around that issue. Remember, this speech and earlier speeches about the vaccine mandate were done in the wake of Afghanistan, because he wanted to get that out of the headlines. So what did he decide to do? Well, we lost the war in Afghanistan, so I'm going to launch a new war against, pick a target. Okay, it's going to be the unvaccinated. So he's launching a war against them to try, and it's not working, by the way, if you look at his poll numbers, but he's launching a war to do everything he can to get that Afghanistan situation out of the headlines, get the economic news out of the headlines, and he's going to be focused. We are working on a story right now that we'll talk about just exactly what's going on inside his government, some of the things they're talking about, some audio that we've come into possession of about their private conversations about what they want to do with the unvaccinated.
Human Events Daily. I highly recommend you go check out the podcast. Apparently everyone else in the country is. Jack Posobiec, thank you so much, my brother.
Appreciate it, Jesse. Always a pleasure.
Looking forward to this. Coming up next, we have Republican representative from Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene. We have elected officials talking about national divorce now. Hang on. Well, this is a treat for me to have her back. We have joining us now Republican representative from Georgia, Marjorie Taylor Greene. And it's a treat for me because there seems to be about five or six Republicans on the Hill with any guts. And thankfully, she is one of them. She even has enough guts to put a poll out on her social media saying, what about this national divorce thing? Congresswoman, thank you, by the way, for actually having some stones there. It's sad you are surrounded by people who don't, but I'm glad you do.
Well, thank you, Jesse. I really appreciate it. I was happy to put that poll up because it's pretty shocking to me how many people are actually talking to me about perhaps it's time to start talking about a national divorce.
You talk to a lot more people than I do, just by the nature of your profession. Why do people want this? What are they telling you?
Well, I mean, it's the state of our nation, and it's the current regime. You know, they're not an administration, they're a regime. Because the Democrat Party has turned so far left, they're not only just socialists, many of them are communists. And you can see this in their policies and the way that they wield their power. Such as an example is vaccine mandates. But the real problem is it's hard to be united as Americans when the left is no longer American. They no longer care about our American values. They no longer care about our freedoms. They don't even care about our border because they want our border wide open. And they're perfectly fine with the illegal invasion that's happening down at the southern border. Not only is Joe Biden so far into the rest of the world and not in tune with being president of the United States of America, the disaster in Afghanistan, he actually abandoned Americans when our, you know, the biggest thing we always promise people is no man left behind. Then he armed the Taliban, the radical Islamic terrorists, a whole nation with $85 billion worth of military equipment and weapons. And then his failed leadership led 13 military members to be killed. Inflation is rising, and now we're looking at a critical supply chain disaster that may leave people without food and necessary supplies this coming winter. And this is only the start. We're 9 months in. And so many people, not only in my district, but across the country, are starting to talk about a national divorce because it's hard to be united with the left in this state of our country.
Congresswoman, you said they don't care, and actually, I wish they didn't care. I think we could live in a world where I loved America, you loved America, and they just didn't care about it. I feel like they're openly hostile towards it. I mean, I don't know how you can look at all these policies and think they're anything but openly hostile towards who we are, what we've been, where we're going. If I wanted to wreck this place, they're doing everything I would do to wreck it.
Oh, they definitely are, Jesse. That's why I call them communists. You see, I'm probably one of the few members in Congress that actually reads the bills. And my staff and I spent a lot of time going through over 2,400 pages of the budget. And I'll tell you right now, if there's anything that the American people can do, it's actually to read these bills that these Democrats are trying to ram through the House with Nancy Pelosi at the leadership. And then look at what, you know, some of our Republican senators will actually vote for along with Democrats over in the Senate. And the American people would be appalled. You need to stop watching the fake news on television that's not telling you anything. You need to stop paying attention to the lies on social media and actually look at the truth. And that's what's written in these bills. And the American people, you may have voted Democrat and you may have voted Republican. It doesn't matter how you vote. I promise you, you would be so outraged at the Democrats writing these bills that you would turn your back on that party as fast as anyone because they are purposely destroying our country. And it's not happening from an enemy outside somewhere, some other foreign country. It's happening with elected leaders within our country.
Do you think the left would support a divorce? See, I argue they would, and at least on some level, I argue they would. I'm a far right wing. I'm a far right winger. I make no mistake about that. I'm certainly not speaking for you, but they hate us, and I hate them back. I don't make any bones about that. I hate them as much as they hate me. So if we hate each other, can't we at least agree on that? We agree we hate each other. Let's move out.
Well, you know, I think it's actually tragic that we're having this conversation. And I was, this is why I pull out. I put it out because I wanted to know. I'm hearing this from so many people on our side. And I'm like, well, what do they think on the other side? And I've paid attention to this poll. And the interesting thing is it's been shared by mostly Democrats because they're trying to stop it. They're trying to defeat the idea and they're trying to get people to vote against it. But yet this poll has a very high yes vote, which surprised me, which means a lot of Democrats are for it too. And see, this is why I say it's sad. It's tragic that we're having this conversation because we shouldn't be. We have the greatest country in the world, but when we have Democrats trying to destroy it, then we no longer have the option, but we may have to consider this being a real discussion and maybe this potentially being the real future for America. Because you look at states like Florida, where Governor DeSantis is just doing a phenomenal job. And then you look at failed states like California with Governor Newsom, where they just want to teach all kids there's no such thing as gender, and that if you're white, you're completely racist no matter what, and that, you know, all these other complete lies, and they're destroying the economy. So, you know, we're really so far apart as far as right and left. And if this is how it is, and the Democrats want to be communist and continue to ram things down our throat like vaccine mandates when many of us have natural immunity, then maybe this is a conversation that we should be having and should be having it in Congress.
You think big tech is going to help out with this country, or do you think they're going to further the divide of this country?
I think big tech is some of our biggest problems in this country, Jesse. It's, you know, if I wasn't an elected member of Congress, I wouldn't even be on social media. I'm not a fan, but I'm there so that I'm engaged and I stay in with information and trying to be in the fight. But I think big tech is our biggest problem, along with our media that divides us. You know, they just flat out lie. It's amazing to me. I'll hear someone give a speech, or I'll have a speech or an interview, and then next thing you know, an hour later on the news, it's being broadcasted with words that I didn't say or the other person didn't say. But it's social media is the real problem. They have declared themselves judge, and they've declared themselves God of the information and who gets to have a platform and who doesn't. And this is when we know as Americans that our country is no longer what it was founded to be, but it's actually being run by tyrants. Some of the tyrants are in government, but oddly, some of the tyrants are in large corporations that are embedded with the government leaders. And that's not what freedom is, Jesse. That's not who we are as America. As a matter of fact, that reminds us of tyrants from the past. And those countries have always seen their downfall and, unfortunately, millions of deaths.
Marjorie Taylor Greene, thank you so much for what you're doing. Please keep up the fight up there.
Thank you, Jesse.
Mark Meckler joins us next. Convention of the States. What is all this fancy Convention of the States talk? I don't understand it, and I legitimately don't understand it. So Mark Meckler is going to educate, well, me, and you can tag along. Next.
While many Americans were disappointed in the outcome of this election at the presidential level, liberty-minded state legislators quietly swept to enormous victories. Now's the time to use this to our advantage and draw the fight for our liberties out of the swamp and into the battlefield where we the people have the advantage, in the states. This plan to call a convention of states can propose constitutional amendments that prohibit Congress from adding justices to the Supreme Court or states to the Union. This plan can secure our Second Amendment rights. It can eliminate the woke Department of Education, and it can stop the federal government from taking over the state election process. You need to know that this plan's underway already, and it's working.
How about that? Joining me now is Mark Meckler. He's the president and co-founder of Convention of the States Action. Mark, I say convention of the states, and about 90% of America think I'm talking about some big continental breakfast thing in a conference room in the Ramada. They don't understand what a convention of the states is. Would you please do me the honor of dumbing it down for people like me?
Sure, and it doesn't take much to dumb it down. It's pretty simple. It's in the Constitution. It's found in the second clause of Article 5, and that gives you and I, acting through our state legislatures, the power to call a convention of states with the purpose of proposing amendments to restrain federal tyranny. The way the process works specifically is that it takes two-thirds of states or 34 states to make application or call for a convention. Then the states will appoint delegations. They'll travel to a convention. They'll debate potential amendments. And then it takes 26 days to get those amendments out for ratification. They're only suggestions at that point. And it takes 38 states to ratify any proposed amendments to the United States Constitution. We've never done it before. We have 27 amendments to the Constitution of the United States. They've all been proposed by Congress. The problem with this is that Congress will never propose amendments that restrain their own power, things like term limits and a balanced budget amendment, taking away their power and giving it back to the states. That's why we need a convention of states now.
Okay, so again, please correct me if I screw any of this up. I just want to understand. A bunch of states get together and say, we're going to get together and come up with amendments. They get together and come up with the amendments, and they just put them out there in the atmosphere. And if 38 states sign up for them, there's nothing the federal government can do. That is now law.
Yeah, that's pretty correct. I mean, there's a little bit more structure to the process. When you go to convention, the amendments that can be discussed are within the subject matter areas that have been proposed by the states. So in the case of our call for a convention, they could discuss anything that would propose term limits on federal officials. That would include not just Congress, but the deep state, bureaucrats, staffers, also judiciary. They could propose anything that would impose fiscal restraints on the federal government, things like a balanced budget amendment, imposing generally accepted accounting principles or tax and spending caps. And then they could propose anything that would limit federal authority, jurisdiction, or scope, things like saying, no, you can't be involved in education, or you can't be involved in energy, or you can't be involved in the environment. Those are the broad limitations on the power of a convention to even have discussion.
Okay, Mark, God forgive me, but I'm doing the best I can not to get my hopes up right now. I prefer to remain a very cynical, bitter human being, but do we have a chance of actually doing this? Because this sounds really nice to me.
Look, I think it's a long, hard road, and that's how the founders intended it, because this is the highest bar in the American system of constitutional governance. But so far, 15 states have already completed the process, so we have 19 to go. I expect Wisconsin to be number 16 here in the next couple of weeks or so. North Carolina is right on the verge. South Carolina is close. Pennsylvania, Ohio look good. So I think we're going to make it, but it is not an easy road for sure.
Okay, that's fine. Look, I've realized that most good things take a long, long, long way to get there. As long as we are making progress, though. We are making progress?
Yeah, we're absolutely making progress. And more people are signing up, you said, and I think it's accurate. 90% of people in the country don't even know what this is. And yet 5.1 million people have already signed up in one way or another to be involved with Convention of States. We're adding over 1,000 people a day to the organization at conventionofstates.com. So the momentum is absolutely there. The day after Biden had announced his vaccine mandates, over 20,000 people signed up for Convention of States. So we've definitely got momentum.
Okay, now one last question on this. We're going to move on to some other things. I'm just curious, who runs this thing? We get a convention of states. Who's in charge of it?
Yeah, it's the state legislatures that show up. All 50 states will attend. They elect their own officers of the convention. And so basically looking at it from my perspective as a conservative, there are currently 31 states with both houses controlled by Republicans. So likely Republicans will generally be in charge of the rules of convention. And then those state legislators or whoever the state legislatures appoint to be delegates will actually run their own convention. We've done this, by the way, as a sample. We did it in 2016. We're looking at doing it again. We did a mock convention and we did that in Williamsburg, Virginia. Folks can see that online at our website at conventionofstates.com.
Okay, now the show tonight is about national divorce, and just so you know my position on it, I believe we should get one. I don't take any pleasure in that. I see the country dividing rapidly and heading down a really ugly road, and I don't want to see a single person in this country get hurt, so I think we should just go our separate ways. You can feel free to fillet me, Mark. I won't yell. Where am I right? Where am I wrong?
I think you're 100% correct. I think it's time for a national divorce, but you and I might disagree. And hopefully I can help sway you my way on what a national divorce looks like. The history of this country is of a divorced nation living together in relative harmony. If you go all the way back to the pre-founding era, the colonies didn't really like each other. You go into the Revolutionary War, they still didn't like each other, but they fought against an existential threat. They disliked each other so much they came out of that war and set up the Articles of Confederation, which didn't work because they weren't willing to give a central government any power. And then ultimately in 1787, they meet again and they are contentious. They don't like each other. They don't trust each other. And out of that dislike and distrust comes the greatest form of government ever known to mankind, in my opinion, for the preservation of liberty, and that's federalism. And what's happened over the last 115 years is we've radically drifted away from federalism. Federalism, in its pure form and the way it was set up by the founders, allows us to govern ourselves as we see fit in the states, essentially, as you said, post-national divorce. But we've got a sort of custody agreement, if you could say that, on a national basis, where we do a limited amount of things together. We need to do those things. There are existential threats in the world that we can't face alone. Even as a Texan, and we Texans love to talk about secession, we know Texas can't stand alone in the world.
Okay, fair enough. But how about this point? I'm the biggest Federalist fan in the world. I'm all about that federalism life. Let's get to there tomorrow. But if the left controls each and every branch of the federal government, I'm not even talking about the House, Senate, and presidency. They control 95% of the federal government votes Democrat. They control the federal system. Yep. Why in the world would they ever allow us to return to federalism?
Well, I think there's two reasons. One is, I would say, the first thing we talked about, which is convention of states, because we can, as the people, remove that power and a lot of those powers from the federal government. When you poll these things, they're immensely popular among the American people. They generally, if they're of the same party that runs the state, they like their own state government. They especially like their local governments. They like the idea of a return to local power. They like the idea of a balanced budget and term limits and things that take the power away from the federal government. So that's step number one. Step number two is most Americans acknowledge that there are certain things and only certain things that we need to do together, foreign defense, border security, things like that. And so I think there is a legitimate argument to be made here that the country will come together around these things.
Mark Meckler, give out your website one more time, please. I want people to go sign up for this.
Sure. It's conventionofstates.com, and you can read the pros and the cons there. Get educated, get involved, conventionofstates.com.
Mark, I appreciate you, man. Keep doing what you do.
Thank you.
All right. I have thoughts. Final thoughts. I mean, I guess I'll have more thoughts after that, but for this show, I have final thoughts next. I don't know whether or not we're going to be able to get a national divorce. I suspect we will, not in the way I want to. I suspect this is something that will happen in the coming years as we continue to grow apart. I just want to say once again, take no pleasure in this, but I do believe this is the best path forward. We are now two different people. I wish it wasn't so. I wish we on the right, mainly Republicans, had done more to stand up and fight and make sure it wasn't so. Yet, you play the hand you're dealt, as the saying goes. You didn't choose this. I didn't choose this. You weren't in control of it. But we have to be adults. We don't get to be kids. And now live in a world of make-believe. We have to live in the world we are given. And the current world we are given is this. We are two different Americas, at least. There's no need to keep doing this. Look, we have separate values. We're separate people. We've grown apart. That sucks. Let's get a divorce.
This is an iHeart podcast.